Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Donate on Patreon.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Luke Owen, joined once again by El Vegador Laurie.
Hey, mate. How's 2 days in a row.
Absolutely.
Who can imagine?
Quite lovely, really.
Going up
isn't
in the
it?
World.
This is the NXT call up.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah. I'm across all of them.
I was going to say, you know, you literally are Alistair
I
Black.
Am Jonathan Gargarinano.
How's your day been?
It's been very busy. Got quite a lot on.
Yeah, it's been a busy day today. Yeah. And me and Laurie. You are Laurie. Me and Ollie have still got more. We've got to do the magazine show to record. We've got Patreon shout outs to do.
The studio is, pretty jam packed. Currently,
busy days at the moment, but that's a good thing. And we're on the road to WrestleMania. It's supposed to be busy.
Yeah.
What did you get up to last night?
So last night I went to my brother's house to celebrate Pokemon Day. My brother works at the Pokemon Company, as I mentioned before. So they had a viewing party when the direct happened for Sword and Shield, and then I just went around his house, had a bit of dinner. Mm-hmm. Watched a few Pokemon-related videos, and then we played Smash Bros. Until quite early in the morning.
Ace.
Had quite a lot of gin.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't very good at Smash Bros. Swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, there's always
that. The gin was nice.
Gin's always nice. Mm. Me and my wife last night decided that we were going to have a bottle of wine because she's not been very well, but she's starting to feel a bit better. So we had a bottle of wine to be like, and apparently it's good for colds and whatnot.
Red or white?
Red. A nice bottle of Yellowtail, which is our favourite. The
Red's
Shiraz.
The true choice.
Absolutely. And then we had a couple of gins afterwards while we debated corporations, essentially, and the good and negatives of them. It was a very, very hippie-ish debate, but it was better than watching Hypothetical, which is a show that's on Dave, which is...
Oh, yes. That's, I can't remember, James Acaster.
It's James Acaster and Josh Widdicombe.
Josh Widdicombe, that's his name.
It is a podcast at best.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't be a TV show, though.
Dave has got... money,
yeah,
that
I
they
guess.
Spend badly.
Well, yeah, I mean, it works for Taskmaster.
Like, Taskmaster's the only big thing on Dave,
right? It's that the only thing they've done
over the heads of all the American listeners.
Yeah, and Taskmaster feels like that is a concept that you can sell elsewhere, like to an American market. You could easily sell the Taskmaster show format. They're doing a live show at the BFI,
Ooh.
My wife's trying to get tickets for it. That was our Valentine's gift to each other. She's trying to get some tickets sorted, but it's sold out. We mentioned in the show that you're about to listen to that we got an email in about NXT. Mm-hmm. So I thought we'll discuss this now.
This is like Back to the Future level stuff.
It is a little bit, yeah. I suppose it is. So this came in from Jaren, who sent in an email that was called Why NXT is Not Better Than the Main WWE Roster.
Antagonistic title.
And he has, in all caps put, is not better. So it really does look like a WrestleTalk headline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clickbait.
Oh, absolutely. And it worked because I clicked into this email very quickly. So congrats. It, you know, you don't blame. If the formula works, you stick to it.
Yeah.
So he writes, okay, so before I begin this email, I must say takeover events are the most exciting events in all of WWE. There's no argument there. However, personally, I think NXT TV has it easier than WWE's main roster, and we give them too much credit on a week-to-week basis. First off, NXT barely has commercials. They're on their own network and don't have to pay advertisers. I guarantee if NXT was on TV every week, the commercial breaks would take away from the excitement and momentum from the matches, just like they do on Raw and SmackDown. Now, my argument to that would be that Raw doesn't always have ad breaks in their matches because it feels like Raw structure their shows better around putting the ad breaks in. Ad breaks do happen in matches.
Yeah.
And
it's where you choose to have your ad breaks.
Yeah.
Like, I think the key is choose entrances.
Yeah.
Like, not every entrance needs to be shown in full. And obviously, like, that's the key. Like, more of the sort of changeover time between matches should probably just be where the ad breaks are.
Exactly, yeah. And it's... NXT, back in the day, used to have their ad breaks in the middle of their matches because the shows were also on TV stations, this, that, and the other. Yeah. But I feel that like they've kind of learned just to kind of structure the shows better and be like, well, we'll just put the ad breaks here rather than in matches because putting them in matches takes away from momentum.
Yeah.
Like he says, and you're absolutely right. If they were on a TV network, then they likely would have like ad breaks in their matches. But I also think they would be smart enough to structure a match so it's not just now you go to rest holds.
Yeah. Well, they still have adverts. Like, they're just adverts for more WWE stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's just for different bits of WWE. So it's like there is still breaks from NXT. I think just the thing with NXT is it just moves at a faster clip because it's an hour long.
That's like it. That's just really the benefit the show has. It's an hour shorter than SmackDown and it's 2 hours shorter than Raw. There are three episodes of NXT for, you know, per Raw episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so of course Raw is going to feel like it's draggier. It's 2 hours longer.
But if Raw structured itself to be 10-minute segments with the 5-minute ad breaks or whatever it is, you get like ad breaks are huge in America. Whatever and plentiful, like whatever the ad breaks are there, like if you structured it around that, like each segment didn't spill over ad breaks,
yeah,
then you'd have a nice fast moving show where it felt like loads happened. You'd probably get a bit fatigued by the end of it, three hours of like 60 different things. But I think that's the key with NXT is that they do a lot of like 1 minuters, 2 minuters, and then there's like a 10-minute match, and then one minute segment, 2 minute segment, 3 minute segment, 10-minute match. Like, it just goes all the way through.
So back to Jaren's email. Second, NXT has way more filler matches than the main roster. 2/3 of the weekly show don't build to anything that's happening at TakeOver, and the only reason they get away with it is because it's developmental. They need to introduce new faces. But in most cases, such as the women's tag team match on yesterday's NXT episode, the wrestling kind of sucks. Okay, maybe that's just Vanessa Bourne. So they have filler and sometimes bad wrestling in a one-hour show, and yet because of the amazing TakeOver event and the Johnny Tommaso storyline, we all seem to look past the constant drag that the weekly show can be. I don't think that NXT is much better than WWE's main roster, only the TakeOver events are. I think the scale is SmackDown, NXT, Raw. I'm also a filthy mark, so I'd like to know what you guys think. I disagree with that. I think that NXT does have matches that don't build to anything, but they also are matches that are, as you say, here are faces and here are people, and eventually we are going to see more of them. It's a developmental TV show, so they have to put these people out there so they can get TV exposure. Yeah. And I would much rather watch, Bourne and Aaliyah versus Xia Li and Ty Nara Conti than Braun versus Bobby Lashley that's going nowhere and building to nothing.
Well, this is the thing.
Or
so, like,
Angle versus Jinder.
Right. So, but the argument to say that like these matches don't go anywhere, this tag match built off a thing last week. Like there was a thing last week.
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. And then now we get this match.
Yeah.
So there is build there. There is progression. There is story. I think the difference is it feels like nothing's happening in certain aspects because there's only three titles on NXT. Like they've only in the last year and a bit added the North American title. So, like, I think it's not as galling when matches don't build to a title shot or to a takeover or whatever for NXT because on Raw and SmackDown, there's people doing nothing, but there's things they could be doing.
Yeah.
And that's the SmackDown and Raw don't make enough of, the US Championship, the Intercontinental Belt. They just get flopped around onto whoever's sort of in vogue backstage at the moment, it seems like. And that's the problem is that there's all these people that you could be building to something with, and they just don't. They are actually filling time because they could be doing something. In NXT, they're not filling time. They're getting developmental practice and slowly building little feuds and stories that might go somewhere. But some of it is just it's your time in front of a crowd in the ring.
The model's also completely different as well. NXT has 5 takeover events a year.
Yeah.
And you have 2 and a bit months to build to each of those shows. So, and then those takeover shows only have 5 matches on them.
Right.
So you're building 25 matches a year, and yet you've got 2.5 months each time to build those 5 matches. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be episodes of NXT which feels like, well, this was an episode of developmental. And we've done episodes on this show where we were like, yeah, and that was an episode of developmental TV. Mm-hmm. But it had this was further, this was done. And I don't think that we've been every episode of NXT, that was the best episode, that was brilliant, that was better than this. I think there have been... We've done more episodes of the show where we've gone like, yeah, you know, it was a good show. I would recommend tuning into this, mm-hmm. as opposed to like it was this week. You're like, oh my God, this week was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, it was a must this week.
So I think, I think that it's, there sometimes does feel like there is more filler because they have more time they need to fill before they can get to the next takeover event. Whereas Raw and SmackDown have a pay-per-view every 3 weeks, seemingly.
Yeah, you have to save the payoffs in NXT.
But they have a pay-per-view every 3 weeks, and yet they still have Angle versus Jinder on Raw that's for no reason whatsoever.
But you get a bit more of a... I think it's a very traditional kind of American TV structure, almost. Like, it feels like those, you know, the long seasons of 20 episodes of Supernatural or whatever, where it's like... Monster of the Week for a lot of it. And then the last 5 minutes of every episode is like progressive story.
Yeah.
Like progress the story for 5 minutes. And then next episode, it's a Bandersnatch.
Yeah.
Vanessa Bourne's a Bandersnatch.
Yeah, it was the first season of The Flash, which was, let's be honest, borderline unwatchable, apart from those 5 minute teasers at the end where like, oh, okay, a good story is coming.
Yeah.
You'd think it would get here quickly. Oh, you'd think, wouldn't you? But it's taking its time. Mm. Yeah, it's taking its time. Hopefully, we can have some more melodrama. Ooh, here's hoping. So, thank you very much for your email. I'm kind of like, I was thinking about this today. This kind of email inspired me to maybe we should have feedback, like listener feedback to the shows. We don't really tend to get that. We tend to get people that email in, you know, like just general emails, barbershop windows, get betters, Rusev Hayes and things like that. To actually have like Raw and SmackDown feedback, listener feedback essentially to the show, I think it'd be quite nice. I think it'd be good. And we, you know, we can pick out, I can't read out every email. If I get 50 emails, I can't do every one of them. So
you've got a good point.
Yeah. So if you've got a good point to make, I'll read it out. So I am going to open up the doors, I think, a little bit to some Raw and SmackDown feedback and NXT feedback. As I say, can't guarantee that I'm going to read everything out because we do have the other segments that we like to do, like Rusev Hayes and Get Betters and things like that. But I think it's maybe a nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, let's crack on into the show itself. We're going to be talking about, though, that spoilerific headline that Bayley and Sasha Banks have returned to NXT. Here's the show. Anyway, so Bayley and Sasha Banks returned to NXT last night. They were the new WWE Women's Champions, and they came out here because on... I think it was on Raw where they first teased, hey, we're going to be defending these belts across all brands. So it's not just Raw. We're going to be defending these on SmackDown and in NXT. And this was kind of like there to cement this idea that Bayley and Banks are going to be defending their titles against all comers within the WWE's greater expanded universe. And this was a lovely little moment.
What a hero's welcome that they got going back to NXT as well.
Crikey. Like a giant, larger pops than very much everyone else on this show. Like, because it's the surprise pop. Like no one's expecting them to be there. So they just got this ginormous pop coming out. It was wonderful.
I loved it. I popped. I was oh, so nice to see them back. Because NXT was always the brand that I watched of all of WWE, like religiously. And I was watching it just at the tail end of Sasha Banks being in it and Bayley being in it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, to see them back in it, it was like, oh, this feels like that sort of like my first love of NXT coming back. It's like,
That's it. Yeah,
so good.
It was such a, like a really organic, lovely moment. And the crowd was so like epically into the idea of them being back and wrestling in NXT again. And I was just like, they even mentioned in this that the last time they were in a ring, an NXT ring together, was at NXT TakeOver Respect when they had the the Iron Woman match, which
she
actually
remembers.
Yeah, pointing to Izzy because Sasha got heat in that match by making Izzy cry, which was just a great spot.
We're all friends now.
Yeah. and it was like a really lovely organic moment. And it took me back to that sort of period that you're talking about. Because I remember like you and I watching the Brooklyn match together. And then a couple of months later watching that other match. And I think that match is often forgotten about in like the Bayley Banks pantheon, because everyone talks about that Brooklyn match. But that Iron Woman match, as it's now been rebranded, I guess, really, really holds up. And it's really great.
I think that was like peak NXT time as well. That was like, that was, I'm not saying it's gone downhill at all, but that was like what would be considered the golden age of NXT.
Exactly right. Especially because you had like your women's division was Bayley, Banks, Charlotte and Becky. And then in your men's division, it was like Finn Balor was the champion. Samoa Joe had just come in. You had some Sami Zayn stuff in there. You had
Shinsuke was on his way.
Yeah, exactly. You had some Kevin Owens stuff in there as well. And Hideo Itami coming in and things like that. Tyler Breeze was on the horizon. And it just felt like it was a perfect time to be an NXT fan. That was like just prior to them really starting to push like the four horsewomen having like feuding with each other and like Becky was teaming with Banks and they were sort of like forming these tag teams. That's kind of where I started to get into NXT, when it was like Finn Balor was facing Neville for the title and things like that. So this was like a really nice throwback, and they looked like superheroes to this crowd.
Yes.
This was like a hero's welcome.
Well, the cool thing about it is that obviously like the NXT crowd, because it's in one place all the time, they've all been going there for years.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Izzy, it's what are we, like 3 years down the line from that? 4 years down the line?
Nearly 4 years now.
She's still there. She's, she's almost like, she'll be an adult before you know it.
Like, exactly. When she came down and when Bayley hugged Izzy, like my notes are just like, oh man, this is wonderful. And then Bayley hugged Izzy and I was like, oh, this is even more sweet. And then when they pointed out and Izzy was crying, I was like, oh, this is the best thing ever. I was close to tears.
Yeah, I just thought it was so good.
And it just, but there was almost that crushing reminder of just like, they could have been this over all the time. If they hadn't gone to the main roster and just been squandered like over and over and over again, Bayley in particular. Like this was one of those like stark reminders of what could have been if they had called Bayley up with a plan and made her that female John Cena that she always could be.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's just one of those things with the size of the audience changing from quite small, like small contained spaces in which the same audience comes every week, and the viewership is smaller in general. So everyone feels a bit more like there's a bit more ownership over NXT, I think, that the audience take in general. And then you go to the much bigger stage and you get lost in these huge arenas with people who just turned up because they heard of The Undertaker one time. You know, like you're obviously going to get lost in the shuffle. But yeah, WWE definitely could have tried with Bayley in particular and Sasha Banks in the post. Charlotte and her just swapping, just handing the Raw title to each other week in, week out for a while.
Was it because she's like a 5-time Raw Women's Champion or something, but never successfully defended the belt?
It was in about 5 weeks she got that.
Yeah, totally. God, that was a bad period, wasn't it? And even like, maybe it's because they were so into the crowd and the crowd was so into them. This was the best promo work that Bayley and Banks have done in so long.
Right?
Yeah. They were great. Like, they were so likable. Yeah. And they felt like real people.
But it felt unscripted in the sense that you know it's scripted, but it felt like this was just them chatting. And it probably is also the smaller crowd vibe as well. That's, it feels a bit more like a comedy gig kind of style. You know, it's just make the people laugh, make them happy. Like, people were super hot for this as well. So whatever you say, you're going to get some cheers.
Yeah.
They got interrupted by You Deserve It chants and all that stuff as it went on. But yeah, they just nailed this promo.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's only good news, isn't it? That like they turn up with brand new title belts and be like, yeah, we're going to be coming here again and you're going to see us wrestle in this ring at some point in the future against people from this brand. And that should be the case, I think, for a lot of the titles. I don't know. I just feel like
I'm so in agreement with you. What this company needs is less titles and more just going across brands. Mm. Like, it's... who cares about the United States Championship? The first time, like this week was the first time I've cared about that title in a while, because now Ollie Davis has got this idea in my head that Truth is going to do the open challenge at Mania and John Cena is going to answer it. So that's for the first time in forever I care about that belt. Yeah.
Something might happen.
Something might happen with it. The IC belt, like Balor's won it, but what's that meant since? You know what I mean? Like it hasn't really felt like anything's really come of it.
Well, it's now just called the Fins Continental belt, isn't it?
Well, there you go, so like I just thought this was a really, really great segment. And then you start to think like, oh, Bayley and Banks versus the Sky Pirates, Bayley and Banks versus Shafir and Duke and that four horsewomen thing. This was a really great segment.
Bayley and Banks versus Tainara Conti.
We'll get on to that.
No?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that.
But this also felt like a bit of a homecoming that they probably needed themselves as well. Yeah. I think like if ever there was, you know, Sasha Banks has been playing with the idea, probably not teasing it, but playing with the idea on Instagram that she wants to leave like the Revival.
Yeah.
And it's probably just, you know, it's just a laugh because she's always playing that she wants to be like the Revival because they wanted to be a tag team.
Yeah.
There's probably also a little kernel of truth in there that says maybe they are dissatisfied. Maybe they do want to go. Putting the belts on them is the first step. Sending them back to NXT is probably the second step to be like, do you remember? Do you remember how good it was? Do you remember the days?
I remember.
I remember Izzy. Remember
2014? I remember. The other thing I would say before we move on and cover the rest of the show is we often get slandered on this show for spoiling things. Mm. Bayley and Banks were the thumbnail for this episode of NXT on the network.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, lads, come on. I felt like a YouTube comment and being like, ah, you spoilt it for me.
Yeah, but that's how they get you to watch it.
Right,
no one
exactly.
reads the blurb. I've only ever read the blurb on the WWE network to be like, which one is it again that I haven't watched? Ah, that one. Okay.
I only read the blurb if I know that Benoit is going to be featured in the match. I'll be like, how are they going to get around this in the blurb? Ah, The Rock defends his WWF Championship.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So the show kicked off with Raw and SmackDown and NXT's Johnny Gargano.
Johnny Busy.
Yeah. Completely consistent in his character. It just feels like the same one that's on Raw and SmackDown.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And he comes out and you had Mara and Ella talking about how 2019 has already been the best of times for Johnny Gargano and the blurst of times for Johnny Gargano, stupid monkeys. And he talks about how he's part of Raw and SmackDown. Johnny Wrestling is back and he was Johnny Champion, but he's going to be Johnny Champion again. I just, I haven't got a championship at the moment. And then he kind of pauses and he has this moment of self-reflection where he's like, and the only reason I've had success, and you can see the thought process in his mind. And as a nice visual clue to what he was thinking about, Tommaso Ciampa comes down to the ring.
Wicked music.
Just great. Like, I always thought that the great thing about the Ciampa gimmick was that he doesn't have entrance music.
Yeah.
But this really does make it like work.
Yeah.
Because it's such great music.
So good.
And I thought Gargano was
it
awesome.
It announces his presence.
Yeah. So I thought Gargano's promo was great. And I think just that little wrinkle of like that moment of the pause of where he's like, the only reason I've had success. Then you have Ciampa come down. And you kind of have this very half-hearted, hey, well, the reason you've had success is because of Raw and SmackDown, when you're like, if we ignore that side of things, this still works.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not going to get into it because they're different universes. Just got to accept that. But he talks about, like, that we're better when we're together.
Yeah.
It's when we're DIY, we hold championships. We do this and we do that.
I didn't really when they were DIY. That was part of the reason they fell out. But, yeah, it's fine. skim over that. But
and he was just like, you know, hey, when we were together, we win. But last week, you were on your own, and you lost.
Yeah, mate.
And he talks about how the Dusty Classic is back, and that's where this all began. And it was. They were put together for the original Dusty Classic. That's where they came into NXT as the tag team for this. And he says that NXT TakeOver New York will end the same way that Phoenix did, with us side by side as champions. And it was just wonderful Ciampa puppet mastery. Granted, the crowd were also being like, no, do it. Yeah, do it. Yeah, DIY.
If anyone was ever getting peer pressured, it was Johnny Gargano.
So I thought this was wonderful Ciampa puppet mastering and kind of like moving things around and being like, no, this is exactly what I want to do, because I want more Goldies. And if I can manipulate you, A, I get another Goldie, but B, you stay away from my Goldie.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I push you away, further away from taking the one, and it just deflects all of that interest.
Exactly, distracts you from that. So I thought this was a really, really cool opening segment.
Yeah, I really liked it. And I mean, it sets up a great, what a bracket for the Dusty Classic,
right?
That you've got now.
Like, holy heckin'. Should we go through that now?
Yeah, let's go through that now. Because
they announced it a little bit later in the show. Because they announced the other four teams that are going to be in now. Obviously with DIY, it's going to be Ricochet and Black, Larkin and Birch, and Mustache Mountain.
Yep.
We'll get into the Black and Ricochet thing in a second. But they talked about, like, well, they announced that the first round matches, and one of these is like, talk about a match that I should have known I want to see this, but didn't think I could possibly see it, and holy hell, now do I really want to see it. They announced the matches: Mustache Mountain versus Street Profits, Larkin and Birch versus Forgotten Sons, Black and Ricochet versus the European Union of
Tell Me More,
Marcel Bartel and Fabian Eichner, and DIY versus the Undisputed Era of Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. And you're like, yes,
I've got, I've got shivers,
mate. That is Bonus City right there.
Right, yeah.
Man alive. Talk about a match I cannot wait to see. This is, with the exception of the Forgotten Sons, a stacked Dusty Classic.
Oh, yeah.
This is an incredible Dusty Classic.
Pretty much all killer, one team of filler. One filler. But normally, but considering that, like, the last couple of Dusty Classics have been dominated by a bigger team.
Like the Authors of Pain,
who just rampage through the first few rounds. So there are filler team, and then someone tries to topple them at the end.
Yeah.
And then the other half of the bracket is actually a bit more hard fought. It's nice to see a bracket where you're actually like, well, I think these could all be very competitive, very interesting matches that aren't just three squashes and a finale.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you look at those teams as well, that I'm like, I want to see all of these teams advance. Like Mustache Mountain versus Street Profits. I love me some like Bait and Seven, but I love the Street Profits. So that's a clash where you're like, oh man, I want both teams to go through.
That's kind of a charisma off as well. Like, yeah, right. Seven versus.
Absolutely. DIY Undisputed Era. I want to see both those teams go through. Larkin and Birch. I want to see them go through. And Black and Ricochet versus Bartel and Eichner. I want to see both of those teams go through as well. Like, with the exception of the Forgotten Sons, who I just feel like we're going to bury each and every week on this show until the end of time.
So they are truly forgotten.
There will be a time when we look back on this and laugh. And they're like the best act in NXT.
Look, we need to get, like, I'm just saying, let's bury Wesley Blake so that if I ever go work for WWE, I can be the Blake. That's all I want.
Okay, fair enough. And I've seen a few people as well, kind of like, because me and Ollie were very down on the fact that this week they sort of very randomly announced Black and Ricochet are now a tag team. Mm-hmm. And they put the tag team on notice on Raw and SmackDown. They pinned the tag champs on Raw, and then on SmackDown they beat Rusev.
Who hasn't pinned the tag champs on quite. Raw?
And then they pinned Rusev and Nakamura on SmackDown again. Who's not pinned them? And so they were like, yeah, they're now a tag team and they're on notice. And me and Ollie were like, oh, well, it's so weird to just smush them together as a tag team. And I saw one comment yesterday on the SmackDown review that was like, ah, just wait for them to then praise the fact that Black and Ricochet are a tag team in NXT.
Yep.
And I'm going to answer that with one simple reason. There is a storyline reason for Black and Ricochet to be a tag team in NXT.
Yes.
Ricochet has had issues with the Undisputed Era for months now. Mm-hmm. Like months, like going back to last year, he has had issues with Adam Cole and the rest of the Undisputed Era dorks. And Black has now had issues with the Undisputed Era as well. And so they are forming an alliance together because, as Ricochet said in a promo, they don't want the Undisputed Era to win.
Yes.
So they're entering themselves into the tournament to make sure that Undisputed Era do not win the tournament.
Yes.
That is a storyline reason for them to be together. That is fine.
But it's also good stuff because, like, I think on Raw and SmackDown, putting them as a tag team is because there's nothing else for them to do at the moment. We've brought them up when we're just filling time until WrestleMania when we actually have a plan and there's all these matches that are probably going to happen. So we're just filling time. You can be a tag team because those divisions don't matter. So we'll do that. On NXT, their story mostly, for both of them, is kind of wrapped up. Ricochet has been the North American champion. Black has been the NXT champion. There isn't really much else for them to do there. The Dusty Classic is a lovely way to wrap all of that up. Potentially get them onto the TakeOver New York card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they're just free and easy to go to the main roster full time if that is the case.
Yeah. I think it's clearly something that has been planned for months now. So, we've been building to this point and now we're going to pay off on that as opposed to they show up on Raw and they're like, tag team.
Yeah. Well, this is like a bunch, but this is basically this one little competition just gives us weeks and weeks of exciting television awesome matches with great teams all in the ring together doing stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what more do you want?
Exactly. I'm very excited about it. I think this is going to be... This has every chance of being the best Dusty Classic of all time. Like, because the lineup is so, so good. Except for the Forgotten Sons.
Well, until they go all the way.
Yeah,
to
I was going to say, right? Yeah.
Forgotten Sons War Raid, is it? Take over New York.
Quite, yeah. Anyway, so that's when we... So after that segment, the opening segment, we got that Ricochet promo where he said that, Black and he have had issues with the Undisputed Era, so now they're teaming together to make sure that the Undisputed Era do not advance in the tournaments. And then you cut backstage, and Ciampa and Gargano are leaving Full Sail, and they walk into Candice LeRae. And Ciampa almost has a look of her, like, not today. And just walks off, like, not my problem.
And she's like, again? Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, again? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the guy. Uh-huh.
And Gargano's like, you've just got to trust me. Because we need trustworthy people in this world.
That's what we need.
Exactly. And she just walks off. So there's lovely little underlying tensions between this Gargano, very uneasy. Well, it's not uneasy because Gargano like shook hands with him because he buys into what Ciampa is telling him. Mm-hmm. But you've got Candice LeRae on the outside going like, no, 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 he is the baddie.
Yes.
You don't side with the baddie. You don't team with Skeletor. You fight Skeletor.
Unless he's giving you loans or whatever it is.
Unless you're Beastmaster, I guess, yeah. Giving you loans. Exactly.
But it was interesting with the Candice thing because I feel like the sort of, oh, this again, aha, blah, blah, blah. It's like Ciampa's this drug that Johnny can't quit.
But
it all ties into the Johnny Wrestling, Johnny Failure paradox thing of like every time he fails, he hates it because when he's winning, he's called the epitome of wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so like he's the only person really that goes from like we love you to you're rubbish like you're terrible.
Stop failing.
On a bi-weekly basis
I love this storyline. Absolutely love it. So then we got a tag team match that has been a bit of a contentious one, I've noticed. It was Vanessa Bourne and Aaliyah who kind of formed a sort of partnership a couple of weeks ago on NXT TV.
And Aaliyah Gents.
Nice. Taking on Tainara Conti and Xia Li, who, and like Conti had issues like the Bourne Aaliyah Alliance, well put.
Oh yeah,
kind of formed in a match with Conti, mm-hmm. right? So like, and that's kind of, so it's paying off from that. Absolutely fine with that. Absolutely wonderful. Where I've seen the contention from this, though, is people saying, like, this is... And actually, we got an email about this, which I'm going to read out on the podcast, the intro version of the portion of the podcast, where they were saying that this is why NXT is not better than WWE, because WWE's main roster doesn't have developmental talent putting on bad matches.
Right.
And I've seen a few people say, like, this is one of the reasons why NXT can be unwatchable at times, because it's four women in a ring who have no idea what they're doing and they produce a bad match. And I'm just sitting there going, like, it's developmental. Like,
I also didn't think this was that bad.
I didn't think it was that bad either. And the whole point of developmental is to give them TV time and develop. Yeah. And get better at this. You get better at this by doing it.
This was the best I've seen Tainara Conti be.
Yeah,
like, I thought she was pretty good.
I thought she got her character across really well. Aaliyah was great in this match. Mm. Like, she got her character across.
People were pleased to see Aaliyah as well.
Like, who'd have thunk it? Yeah.
Digging her out of the closet really works. Like, yeah. Hang out the Aaliyah. Yeah. She's got a few creases in her.
So I thought it was quite unfair that people have been very down on this match.
Yeah.
Because this match is what NXT is designed to be. Mm. You get your matches like Dijakovic and Lay that we'll talk about in a bit, or you know, Shayna Baszler and Mia Yim that we'll talk about later on. But also you do have to have these matches where people develop and learn and you get better.
Yeah. But also, I just think I think the thing with this match is it stands in stark contrast to how good the quality of the rest of this episode was. This was a very good episode of NXT.
So good, yeah.
So what this match went up against was a hot angle from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
a really big announcement from Ricochet that came between when they talked about the Aleister Black team up, then this match, then Keith Lee, Dijakovic.
Yep.
And then...
And the Bayley and Banks thing.
Bayley and Banks. And then yeah.
Mia Yim Baszler.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah. So, like, yeah, it's obviously the worst thing on the show, but I don't think it was by any means bad. And it was only 5 minutes long.
Yeah, quite, exactly. And, it was basic stuff. It was working over Conti after she ran wild early. Then Xia Li gets the hot tag and she runs wild. Got some lovely little kicks, Xia Li.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Bourne blind tags in. And they hit this... It's a double team move that kind of it. I think it works better on paper than it does in practice, because on paper it sounds like it's quite a good idea. So you've got Bourne holding Lee's face over her knee, and then Aaliyah does a neck breaker, and by doing so, because you flip them over, it turns into a back breaker at the same time. It's a very convoluted move, but it kind of works to a degree. But it looked like it had zero impact.
Yeah.
And the crowd were just like so flat for it as a finish.
Mm.
And it's not like, oh, we're debuting this cool new move. And everyone goes like, oh my God, that's crazy. I've never seen anything
people
like
sort of
it.
People went, that's it. Okay.
They were like, but that's weird.
Yeah.
I guess it sort of works.
That really felt like a two kick out.
Yeah, right. So I didn't think the match was terrible. No. I thought it was an NXT developmental match. Which is what we're here for.
There was some promise in there from various people. There were some cool little bits, like Bourne did a sort of reverse Bronco Buster to the back of someone's head, wrapped her legs around and just started hitting her in the head and had to be pulled off. That was cool. I think it was interesting stuff being tried in this match.
And it's these four are kind
fairly
of...
fairly inoffensive, I find.
Yeah, yeah. These four as well are going to be sort of like your next crop of top women's talent. I guess they're going to have to be, really, because Nikki Cross has already gone. Baszler doesn't feel like she's long for this NXT world.
No.
Mia Yim, I think, will certainly be dominating in that with Shirai, Sane, and Belair, as kind of, I suppose, and Candice LeRae. So I think there's a lot of like potential within the women's division, and these four here feel like, well, this is a good project for us to work on.
Right.
I feel bad for Aaliyah because she's been there for like, it feels like she's always been there.
Yeah, she's actually secretly a cleaner. I think that's.
Earlier today, in the show that was, Dream was being asked about winning the title last week. He's kind of walking outside of Full Sail. Undisputed Era walk up and they're just being the Undisputed Era.
What's up, VD?
And it's just like, Adam Cole's like, the only experience you'll feel is me winning the title. And then he like, turns to the camera and is like, don't talk to him. Talk about Fish and O'Reilly being in the Dusty Classic. And you've got Strong, who's got no horse in this fight because he's not part of anything, just doing like... just punching his palm of being like, oh, we're going to get you. Oh, yeah. We're going to get you.
I love when Fish was like, hey, you're farting up the wrong tree here. Like... There was a lot of brilliant little bits in this, and I can imagine it was very hard to keep a straight face doing it because they were hilarious.
Oh, so
O'Reilly great. At the end where he was like, "Jaw, I hate him. I'm so mad," as he walks off.
Jaw, I hate him. Especially because Dream was like, "I don't have time for you." And Cole's like, "What? Everyone has time for us." I thought it was great. Kathy Kelly was outside William Regal's office to try and get word on who the four other teams are going to be for the Dusty Classic. And then you can hear sort of like some arguing, you know, off camera. So that she, like, as a roving reporter, takes the cameraman down. And it's Belair and EO just shouting at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And later on in the show, Regal announces that in 2 weeks, EO and Belair are going to face off. And the winner is going to face Shayna Baszler for the championship at Takeover New York. Good, good.
That's a good match.
That, well, yeah, either way, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's talk about...
Yeah.
This is a match...
Bask in his glory.
This is a match that you and I have been saying. They should just put this on TV.
Yes.
Like, for seemingly since we started doing weekly NXT reviews, we've been saying, you just need to put Dominik Dijakovic versus Keith Lee on TV, and it'll get massively over, and it'll, it'll make them both feel like superstars.
Boy, howdy, did it.
And boy, howdy, did it. This was like a small taster, like a little morsel of that bowler match from a couple of years ago that made you go like, oh my God, it makes your hair stand up on end.
But also the two clashing on the World's Collide tournament. They were in the opening Battle Royal and they had a big fight in that.
Yeah, so this was Dominik Dijakovic versus Keith Lee. Off the bat, Keith Lee's got better music.
Oh, it's great. I really
so
like it.
So much better. One of our...
I like the fact it's still a little bit cheesy. But I enjoy that about it. I like it feels Keith Lee.
And it feels like him walking out fits that music as well, like with the pose and like the pushing back of the hood and like, you know, the thumb and everything. It really feels like it fits him. One of our big pledge hammers on Patreon, Phil Stopper, got in touch. He wasn't a fan of it. He thinks it's almost worse. Mm. But I think it's a much better presentation of Lee. Instantly with this music, he feels like a bigger star.
I enjoy his sort of Shatner rap over the top of it as well. That he's
Shatner rap. It's, I mean, my notes here, I've written in caps lock, this is so much better.
Yeah.
Oh, so much better. And then, this match. As I said, it was like a tiny morsel of that bowler match. So and it gave you just enough to make you go like, God, I want to see more. I want to see more of these two. I want to see these two have a takeover match.
I was sat in the office on my own this morning watching it as like, I've never been, because I came in quite early today for the first time ever. And I was watching NXT at my desk and like, I've not been in mostly when all the other offices file in here. It's like quite a lot of people come in at 8. And people were filing past the window, and I kept going like, "Whoa!" They kept having to like look in to be like, "What's happening?" He's watching Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic.
He's watching these two ginormous lads
having crazy stuff.
Who having a 205 live match?
Yeah, it's like when you the old SmackDown games when you used to make the tallest person you can, but you were like, "Oh, they're a high flyer." Yeah. Oh, they do a Swanton bomb.
Oh yeah, now my guy is 6'8", but he does the 619 and the West Coast pop as his finish. It was just awesome. Like, you had them doing the leapfrogs and their hip tosses, but both landing on their feet. And then, like, Lee lifts him up for a powerbomb. But
Like, he was nothing.
Like, oh, up you go. I mean, I know you're 6'12" or whatever, but and you're 1,200 pounds, but up you go. And then Dijakovic does this monkey flip, and Lee just flies out of this, effortlessly lands on his feet.
It was so good.
There was no effort to that whatsoever.
So we've seen this exact spot in New Japan a couple of times. They tried to do it in WWE quite recently, but it didn't go quite as well. Oh, they did it on TakeOver. Ricochet did
it. Yeah.
But he landed a little funny, so it lost a little bit of the impact. But this spot we've seen where someone flips out of, it's normally a hurricanrana on the top rope. Someone flips out of that and lands, and then there's the person crumpled in the heap on the floor, who thinks they've done the move, staring one way, yeah. and then the slow dawning realization that the other person is stood up and fine.
Yeah.
This was the best one I've seen.
It's so funny because I was just thinking then, the best version
of
that.
Watching Optimus Prime do a flip. It was
the best version. I was thinking then, best version of that I've seen recently was in the Pac Osprey match at Rev Pro. Like, Pac's selling of that was wonderful. But yeah, you're right. This might be one of the better ones. I thought this was just awesome.
I think it's just because it's the most preposterous.
And they do things like, their strikes just feel so visceral and real. And it's thigh slapping wonders. It's just...
The bit where he goes up, Dijakovic goes up to do the, like, what you assume is probably a missile drop kick.
Yeah.
Keith Lee just... grizzly slaps him down.
It was great.
You have to watch this match.
Yeah,
it's
just like chopping him out of midair, these huge slams, and then they kind of work to the outside, and Dijakovic does this massive bicycle pump kick, this discus pump kick. Holy heck, it's, and then an Acai moonsault.
Because why not
because you can feast your eyes, mate.
Physics don't apply.
Yeah. And then it ends in this double countout. And it was a perfect double countout as well, because the crowd were ready for this to continue.
Yeah.
They weren't like, now they're going to do a double countout spot. They were like, we're just getting started here. Yep. And then the commentators are talking over everything because they're recapping all of this insane action that's gone. And then the referee counts 10 and the match ends. The crowd go nuclear, boo, we want more of this. And Mauro Ranallo's going like, we were so focused on recapping things, we didn't even hear the 10 count being done. It made it feel so genuine and real. And it's the sort of finishes that you kind of need to do every now and again to make you think and to kind of keep you on your toes as a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Not to expect a match can end at any point.
This is the right thing for both these men as well at this point in time. Although we were saying Keith Lee needs some wins, but more importantly, he needs to stop losing. And this wasn't a loss. This was just, it's been thrown out, and everyone is sitting there going, well, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that this is TakeOver.
It has to be a TakeOver
match.
That's what I've written.
It's
so
good.
This has to be a TakeOver match. Like, a 20-minute TakeOver match would be just absolutely... And the crowd there will be so amped for it.
Man, it's such a good match.
On a card that will also have Walter versus Tyler Bates.
Pete Dunne.
Pete Dunne, yes. I'm thinking of Progress last year. And it was just an absolutely awesome showcase. And I said, I loved that finish.
Yeah.
And it was something that Meltzer was writing this in The Observer this week. It's why it sprung to mind then. He was talking about a New Japan tag match with Liger and Ishimori. And the other people in the tag match, names escaped me. I can't remember. I was just reading it briefly. And they wrestled like you normally would do your opening 3 minutes of a tag match, and then you tag the other people in, and they go and do their next bits. But the first thing they did after that is Liger got in and pinned Ishimori, and that was it. And the crowd went crazy for the finish because no one expected that finish to come out. And Meltzer said that you do these finishes to keep the crowd on their toes. You can't do them all the time because then everyone expects that to be the finish.
No.
But if you do these sorts of things every now and again, it can really build to something bigger. And that's building to Liger versus Ishimori for the Cruiserweight Championship, for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. So I think this as a finish to build to a bigger takeover match is brilliant.
It was just perfectly pitched, I think. Yeah. That was the key. Like you said earlier, it's the quit while you're ahead. They were, after that moonsault was the peak of when the crowd were hot for this match.
Yeah.
The perfect time to just be like, no more.
Yeah. We're taking this away from you now.
Yeah.
If you want to see more of it, you've got to pay for it.
Yeah. It's genius.
I thought this was awesome. Just so, so good. Keith Lee is the absolute man, and Dijakovic, great. I'm even coming round to that name. Then we got
I like his flips.
Yeah, I won't go that far. The name is, I like the flip-de-doos as well. They did the announcement of the Dusty Rhodes Classic, and then we had that Bayley and Banks segment we talked about earlier. And then we got, last week, you and I said, I'm hoping this is the Mia Yim coming out party we've been waiting for.
Right.
We're hoping that she can have a really good match with Baszler because she hasn't had the best NXT run yet because she's been in the ring with people that, frankly, I don't know how to use the term beneath her because that's made it sound derogatory. But she hasn't been there to someone to
Match her.
Match her and to really show off what she can do. And that's what we got here, where she took on the NXT Women's Champion, Shayna Baszler, in a fantastic main event.
This was a really interesting psychology-based match.
So great. Right.
But also just like, I think what was so good about it was that actually it was perfectly pitched as well, because we had just come off the back of Keith Lee and Dijakovic, which was a look at the things I can do match. Like, anything you can do, I can do more flips.
Yeah.
Like, and then this match
I can do but taller.
And then this match was like, just pure, I'm working this, you're working this.
Yeah. And then we'll use those bits and we'll work those bits into the spots that we're going to do. So it was, Mia Yim had kind of targeted Baszler's hand. She had stamped on it on the ring steps, but in doing so, she followed that up with, tried to booting her into the ring steps, and Baszler dodged. So Mia Yim kicked the ring steps herself very, very hard. And that allowed then Baszler to target the leg. And she had this moment, because Mia Yim is screaming in pain, like really putting over that this is agony. She's there on the floor screaming in pain, and the referee's asking, can she go? And Baszler keeps looking at the referee going like, I mean, she's quitting, right? I mean, she's asking, she's going to quit.
Yeah.
And then when she doesn't, Shayna Baszler has this smirk on her face of being like, oh, yeah, that was a terrible error.
Yeah. Or made a grave mistake.
Oh, that was terrible. I'm now going to really hurt you.
But I like the fact that this match as well was... Because obviously, for a lot of the Baszler matches we've had recently, she's had her little ponies with her. She's had Duke and Shafir. And this was Baszler just coming out on her own to be like, no, okay, I've got it.
Yep.
Like, I'm fine. Like, it's nice to see champions who are leading groups, but based on sheer force of will rather than like, you know, I'm leading this group because I should be, because I'm actually the boss.
And I'm
actually wicked.
And
rather than,
you
know, like, because you feel like in the case of, maybe Daniel Bryan's a bad example, but say Daniel Bryan ends up in a stable, as expected, that maybe Luke Harper joins with him and Rowan. You've got two giants and a small man, and it feels like they're the power. Same as the Wyatt family, where Bray wasn't, he was like the charismatic leader, but Braun was the brawn.
Yeah.
And here it feels like Baszler is both the brains and the brawn, and the other two are along for the ride because... Why wouldn't you attach yourself to somebody's coattails when they're clearly going to amazing places?
And NXT is a brand, and you can tell this is very much a Triple H mentality, that are just happy to have heels win clean.
Yeah.
Because you see this in NXT UK as well. Mm. Like, heels don't always cheat to win. They just win.
Yeah.
Because they're good wrestlers. Mm. And it doesn't matter if you're a babyface or a heel. If you're a good wrestler, you win.
When we said this about Adam Cole a while ago when he was North American champion, he would come out to defend it on his own on NXT TV. Like, it just makes it feel like the belt is worth something. It's on, like, it makes it feel like it's one on the right person, but then you get behind the person who wants to take it because of their merits too. It's not just like, well, you're a goodie, so I'd rather you had the belt than this cheater. Like, you're not the Miz just running away and, you know, trying to avoid having matches altogether. You actually want to defend the belt, and then you build to a point where someone goes, you know, like Daniel Bryan saying, I feel like I'm being screwed here because I've got to go in here first. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. You're just trying to take this belt off me by you sort of fudging the numbers.
Yeah. And Bryan is a good example of that as well, because Rowan helped him win at Fastlane.
Yeah.
But then at the Elimination Chamber, he lasted the whole match on his own and did beat everyone essentially in that match, which puts him over as a credible champion.
Yeah.
Which then means if you are the babyface that does pin him, will feel like even more of a credible champion.
Absolutely,
because they beat the guy. And it's the same thing with Baszler here. Like, Baszler winning this match clean as a sheet was just, it was great, because it really does put Baszler over. And she has had a lot of shenanigans in her matches, as you said, because her little ponies have been sort of like round ringside and interfering at things, going back to Evolution last year and then take over Phoenix and all this sort of stuff. So I think she kind of needed a win like this.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, also because her run-ins have been rubbish.
Like, well, that's because Baszler and Duke are very ineffectual.
Yeah, barely hit the target. They're normally just running past, I think. No, they're just trying to get the fastest way out of the arena is through the ring.
They're Nia Jax in the Elimination Chamber. Like, Bailey's nowhere near. It's like, I'm going through that pod, mate. And there's just... So this was great because it was Mia Yim trying to do her usual stuff, but she couldn't because her leg hurts. She had a moment where she tried to like run, but her leg gave out. Mm-hmm. She was trying to kick, but her legs weren't working.
And she hits Eat Defeat.
Yeah, she does this like, yeah, but it hurts her again. But it's Baszler's always got this mentality where it was like, well, it's fine because your leg's hurt and I'm just going to kill your leg. Mm. And then she locks in the Kirifuna clutch and her hand, she can't use her hand because her hand was injured earlier in the match.
William grabs
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And because she's been working over the hand. So basically is ineffectual in locking in the clutch. So she's like, now I'm at a disadvantage here. And that just then builds up more. Yim can fire back and she kind of hits the slam. And she goes to lock in the clutch again. And Mia Yim again stops her with the hand. And so basically just wraps Yim's leg up with her leg. Hand up with her leg.
Yep.
Really ties her into a knot. And Yim can barely tap out of this. Because her arms are sort of like, oh, I can just about do a tap. I thought it was awesome.
I absolutely love submission psychology. Yeah. I love tiny tweaks. Pointless tweaks to submissions that just like, that is cool. Like Zack Sabre Jr. in the Cruiserweight Classic where he couldn't use his arms to lock in the arm, like the armbar thing. So he does it with his legs.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff I'm so into. And this was exactly that sort of like, oh, can't do that. Do this.
Yeah. It's Banks at Elimination
Banks
Chamber.
Banks at Elimination Chamber. With, yeah.
Yeah. I thought this was an awesome, awesome match. And it capped off an awesome episode of NXT. Mm-hmm. It's the first day of tapings. It's that first day of tapings feel for NXT, your new set of tapings. It just felt so fresh and like just wonderful. Yeah. And it really got me amped up for TakeOver New York. Didn't even announce a match for it.
No.
But all the while, because what we've been doing is like, oh, okay, well, we got all these teams here. They could be going to New York to face
set
it.
Set this up.
All these teams in the Dusty Classic. Oh, they could be going against War Raiders at TakeOver at New York. That's going to be great. Oh, what if they do Dijakovic versus Lee at TakeOver New York? Oh, my God, that's going to be great. What's Tommaso Ciampa going to do? Oh, my God.
It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
They are on a roll at the moment.
But this is what the 2 months building up to WrestleMania or TakeOver New York, NXT's WrestleMania, should feel like. Yeah. You should feel excited to watch the product. And it should be, you should save your best wrestling for now.
Yeah.
Like, because you want people to be there for your biggest event of the year. Otherwise, you're not going to have 100,000 people in the arena or whatever claims they're going to make about how many seats they can sell out. Like, this is the point of it, isn't it? Like, you start building things now that people will be excited about. So meanwhile, on Raw and SmackDown, while everyone's in a panic going, what are we doing? what is happening? Like, they can't make their mind
up. Make Finn Balor face Leo Rush.
Yeah, they can't make their mind up if they want Kofi in the WrestleMania match or is he in the Fastlane match. We're swapping between the two on a weekly basis. We banned Becky because that's going to make it better for WrestleMania, I guess.
Yeah, like, I mean, I like some of those storylines.
That's fine. Yeah, I don't mind them, but they're also just like, it just feels like everything is being thrown at that just to get the product to a place where people are like, oh, it's good again.
Yeah.
But not good in a way that builds somewhere. Just good that people might come back next week to watch it. You never know.
Yeah.
Whereas NXT feels it's vital to watch now because not only is the content in the ring good because, well, the content in the ring got good on Raw and SmackDown because the NXT guy showed up, but like the content in the ring of NXT is good, but also the stories feel like they've, one, got a tail back that you can go, well, there's history here and these things are sort of building somewhere. And you know that coming up in the future, we're going to get huge payoffs.
Yeah. I thought this was an excellent, excellent episode of the show. Got me super psyched for TakeOver New York and we haven't even got a card for it, but I'm thrilled. Loved it. So prior to coming in to record this episode, we watched the new trailer for X-Men The Dark Phoenix, which is obviously the film that everybody wants to talk about at the moment. I am kidding.
On everybody's blue lips.
I'm, of course, joking. There isn't a single person in this world that is excited for that movie.
Apparently they've done multiple reshoots and advanced screenings of this, of different cuts. And everyone has come out of the advanced screenings going, oh, God, that sucks.
Yeah, this film has had extensive reshoots. This was meant to come out last year.
Yeah.
And it kept getting delayed and pushed back. And yeah, as you say, it's gone through extensive amount of reshoots. And they have done these audience screenings of it. And the audience feedback has always been very bad.
Mm.
So they've just been... This is going to be a patchwork movie of filler and... Like, okay, well, let's try this. Oh, now this seems very different. Now this seems very different. It might end up being along the lines of Josh Trank's Fantastic Four.
Oh.
Which is two films that have been smushed together and have just been very much tried to save in the edit.
It's just, but
Rooney Mara's weave gives it away.
this stuff just feels like it's all, we're just gripping onto these licenses for our lives rather than like, oh, we had a really good idea for a film to make, because clearly you didn't, because you had to shoot it multiple times.
Yeah,
like
it's also the second time you've done it.
Yeah, we're just refusing to relinquish our grip on these films.
Yeah, we got to do this because X-Men movies sometimes make us money.
Yeah, when Wolverine is in them.
Yeah,
the doy.
Yeah, it does look very, very bland.
Well, I think this is the thing. I think because the X-Men license, right? You got to make this film because you got to use the X-Men property, but they need to keep the X-Men property to keep hold of Deadpool, to keep hold of Wolverine, to keep hold of... There's these more advanced characters that they're doing bigger things with. And the X-Men now are actually... The core X-Men team is a very small part of that.
Yeah.
And almost the least consequential part of it.
It's also something that's just going to go belly up anyway, because it's going to be absolved into the Disney vortex.
Mm.
And Disney will just be like, well, we're not going to continue on this continuity because zero people care about it.
Yeah.
So we're just going to reboot it regardless.
You already retconned it.
Yeah, like, yeah, you've retconned this.
In a film, you may...
We're doing The Last Stand, the worst of the original X-Men movies, again. And this somehow looks worse than Last Stand did. At least I was excited for Last Stand. I think Age of Apocalypse just sucked out all interest I had in this current X-Men world.
Man, like, First Class was so good. And
awesome.
It felt fresh.
Great.
And interesting. Yeah. And I was like, let's just do that. And then they were like, no, it has to join up with the old one.
I did love Days of Future Past. I will say, I thought that film was great.
I felt like, yeah, but Days of Future Past was like, felt like wrapping
that
up
should have
nicely.
Been the end
like,
of it.
We're killing this thing, and this is the new status quo. And then somehow the new status quo was like, then that means we can rehash the stories from before.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It is.
A cunning plan.
Yeah. Although we did have a good guffaw in the office at James McAvoy's.
What's the line?
I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do. I don't know why he sounded like Partridge.
Lynn, I don't know what to do.
Oh, that film's good. I hope he does that voice throughout.
Throughout, yeah. Yeah. Oh, but what we actually...
Maybe McAvoy wasn't available for the dub and they got Coogan.
Yes. But I think what we're going to really talk about, though, the trailer that I was actually referring to, is we watched the second trailer for Detective Pikachu.
My God, that film looks good.
That is a film that looks so much better than it has any right to look.
Yeah. I don't understand.
It's remarkable.
But I don't understand how it got made.
Well, yeah.
Like, to me... My experience of Pokemon is that it is a series that is sort of almost a time capsule, because the Pokemon anime is pretty much the same cartoon it has been since it first came out. Like, the structure is the same. You meet a new Pokemon, Team Rocket come on, you do some gyms, Ash never gets anywhere. Same thing. The games are literally like, yeah, new region, new Pokemon, but the structure of the games fundamentally has remained the same for 20-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
Where did Detective Pikachu, where did this sudden bout of magical creativity come from to be like, and he's a Pikachu detective and it's basically Ryan Reynolds?
That, and I think that's kind of the genius of this. Like,
what?
When I first showed the trailer to a group of friends, to Heverin and things like that, her comment was like, this looks like it's a fan movie.
Right.
Like, it looks like something Funny or Die would have made.
Mm.
And to be like, Wouldn't a live-action Pokemon movie look great? And we all go like, oh, man, actually, yeah, that does look really cool. Obviously, it's not going to get made. It's not real. And then you watch this trailer and you're like, this doesn't look like it's a real movie.
No.
But I love it. And it is real. And I can't wait to see it.
Man. But it also is just like, they've gone big.
Yeah.
What I love about it isn't just like, it's a live-action film. Like, other studios probably would have done. Like, if it was a different film or a different property, if it was Digimon, the live-action movie, there would be Detective Agumon, and it would be...
People would care.
Yeah, less people would care. But also, there would only be one CG character, and that would be Detective Agumon. Like,
yeah.
I could imagine a world in which Detective Pikachu, the world is populated by people, and someone somewhere gets transformed into a Pikachu, and people are like, what even is a Pikachu?
Yeah.
But this is like living, breathing Pokemon world come to life, full of like seemingly hundreds of cameos from different Pokemon.
And it's this
mad.
It's this wonderful new era I feel like we're in movie making that I attribute very much to the MCU side of things. Mm. Like the 2000s was a period for comic book movies that was very hit and miss.
Yeah.
For every Spider-Man 2, you had a Fantastic Four, a Daredevil, an X-Men Last Stand, and a Hulk. The list goes on and on and on. Like
all of the other ones.
A Ghost Rider. You know, like all of these like boring, rubbish movies that were just made because X-Men was a hit, so every studio was like, make me a comic book movie. I want one of those on my slate.
But so, I don't have very much money, so...
Yeah, and so it's and it ended up being pants because a lot of these Hollywood types, and this is not just me speculating. I've done a lot of interviews with people who have said this. They think themselves above comic book movies. They're like, well, we're not going to do what the comic book movie, the comics do, because those are silly and those are drawings.
They're for babies.
They do not work in the live action format. It's the Michael Bay argument. When he did Transformers, like, you can't do the G1 designs. That doesn't work in a movie format.
You're a mug, Bay. You're a mug.
Like, you know, fast forward 10 years later with Bumblebee that's got G1 designs. What do you know? They look awesome in live action. What a funny that.
Yeah. And it's funny also the nostalgia sells.
But like the MCU, they didn't care. They were just like, well, no, Iron Man looks like this, so Iron Man's going to look like this. Captain America has a costume which is red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
And he's going to look like that in the movies. We're just going to make them look like they're real world things. We're not going to be X-Men where everyone's wearing black leather, because if you put Wolverine in yellow, it'll look silly.
Yeah. But I think it's a ballsy move to do that in the first place. But it's ballsy also to bet the bank on it and be like, actually, if we funnel some money into this thing, it will be successful because it will look good. Like, if you can make it, you know, with Detective Pikachu, the other key is also letting the license off the reins a little bit, because Pokemon has always been a very safe property, like I said. Detective Pikachu feels like kind of a risk. Even some of the marketing materials they put out with Ryan Reynolds doing his silly like skit that he did. Do you see that one?
Yeah, yeah, the black and white
video. Yeah, 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 like that video when he's like, Pika Pika, it's just me. Yeah. That stuff is great. But just, I think, taking something and running with it, but feeling like you've done everything you can to bring it to life and take it to the nth degree, which is what Detective Pikachu looks like. It's like, oh no, we put some care and some love into this.
Yeah.
And everyone who watches it just goes, my God, they really did.
Yeah.
I'm so stoked for that film.
I hope we get this with the Sonic movie. Like,
absolutely not. Look at his weird legs.
I know the legs. Look at his creepy legs. But that's stuff you can fix in post now. Like, that's
we can shorten him.
We can fix that now.
They're not gonna fix that now. That's what they decided he looked like. He's a hedgehog with a man's legs. I don't like it. I am remaining
positive.
Of course you are, because it's Sonic the Hedgehog.
I think it's going to be great.
Who's going to be Robotnik?
It's Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey?
Yeah. Oh
my God.
Right?
Yeah.
So I remain hopeful for that film at the very least. But I'd like that. I'm also hopeful as well, because Nintendo are very, very... Very protective of their licenses. After the 93 Mario Brothers movie, that essentially was it. They were like, well, we're not going to do movies based on our licenses anymore, because that movie was very bad. There was like Nintendo for a while were trying to shelf that movie and being like, let's not even release it because we're not happy with it. We don't like it. Shigeru Miyamoto liked it, but like, we don't like this movie.
I think Shigsy's crazy.
Well, I think Shigsy's just like, goes like, oh, it's Mario, but it's not really. And it's a fun little movie. Like, he didn't watch that movie and go like,
he went, the games are canon.
Or he walked out and like years later, someone said like, oh, that's a Mario movie. He's like, was it? I thought you just told it to be a fun little movie. When they did the Metroid movie, the John Woo movie that didn't get made in like the sort of early mid-2000s, Nintendo were just so protective of their product. And then when the writers started asking questions about these characters, they didn't want to give any answers.
Right.
And that's why the Metroid movie never got made, because Nintendo essentially didn't want it to go bad.
Right. They let Other M happen, though, didn't they? They let Team Ninja have a bash and mess it up.
Mess it up, exactly. And funny enough, actually, when I spoke to the producer of Metroid, they was like, yeah, a lot of the stuff that we were asking about with that film ended up in Other M.
Terrible stuff.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible things.
So I'm hoping that if Detective Pikachu does well and people are very receptive to it, then maybe Nintendo will be like... I mean, because Sony are making a Mario movie. They're doing an animated Mario movie. Whether they might be able to let them have the reins off a little bit with that, not be so restrictive of the... But maybe they're more protective of Mario than anything else. Because like, it's probably Mario and Zelda are like their two most... People should make an F-Zero movie. They clearly don't care about that.
But I think that's the problem, isn't it? The other thing with Nintendo is that actually... Like, Pokemon's quite good because it's quite actually... For a Nintendo property, a very fleshed out mythology, world, and characters. Like, you've got the Pokemon all have personalities that you can just go, well, that's what they're like. Like, how over is Mr. Mime in that trailer? You get Mr. Mime immediately. Like, Pokemon has a lot to draw on. Mario and Zelda is a lot of filling in the blanks. Like, Link doesn't talk, so. Goodness knows what voice you could give him.
Well, excuse me, princess.
Yeah, exactly. And then Mario, the story is so basic.
Yeah.
That doesn't carry a movie.
That's why you have to go into an alternate universe of New York where dinosaurs are real.
Yes, exactly. But that's like, I think...
Credit to them. Yeah. They had to make that film.
I think that's what you had to do.
Right, like, exactly.
Yeah, there was no other option to be like, it has to be this thing.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be DeVito.
And it nearly was. Yeah. It was nearly.
It was Hoskins, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Hoskins. It was Danny DeVito was their first choice.
Was though. He?
Yeah, he was the first choice. And when I spoke to the director, she was like, and really, it's because he's short.
Yeah.
And that was why it was going to be
they
Danny DeVito.
They could have done DeVito and Hoskins.
Yeah.
DeVito starts, he gets the mushroom, and he transforms into Hoskins.
So long as they're still doing the same voice.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy, get out of here, get out of here. I'm Mario. Great film. Buy my book. Anyway, that is all we've got time for on this episode of the podcast. Speaking of video game adaptations, I am doing a special introduction for Street Fighter the movie at the Prince Charles Cinema on March 22nd. There's none of that in there. Because it's not really that tied to the film. But and if you want to know, hey...
Norioken!
Good one. If you're thinking to yourself, why wasn't the Street Fighter movie more like the game? Well... Either A, buy my book and get the support for you, or come and see my introduction where I can explain it to you. And it'll be nice to see everyone down there. That is all we've got time for. Ollie and I will be back on Saturday for the magazine show, where we're going to be talking about what's next for Roman Reigns, along with your mailbag questions and your crap gimmicks. Until then, take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.